Well, I find that more and more that the young men that I work with and help to train, that they're looking for freedom. And that freedom is only found in Christ. You can't get away from yourself, but you can go to Him. Well, the blessing of stable youth in the church. Youth is a time of searching, challenging the status quo, reckless ambitions, disillusionments, and frustrations. Every one of us adults, I hope, can admit that we made decisions in our youth that didn't put us in the stable category. At least I did. Do we sometimes expect heroes instead of youth like I was? Do we ever do that as parents? Or maybe how do you define stable? How do you define stable? So I'd like to try to define stable a little bit if I can. When I was in Canada, I was 19, and the man I was working for at the mission, we had a dock, but it was out on a windy pier. And so he wanted to build an inland dock so that we could bring the boats in where it was safe and you wouldn't be rocking around when people were trying to get in and out in the wind and so on. And so we had some dynamite there, and it was really old. And I don't know if you know much about dynamite. I didn't and still don't. And it was really old dynamite, wet. And so he ordered in some fresh dynamite and some dynamite caps, and we took this dynamite. And he just told me what to do. I had absolutely no knowledge of what dynamite did and what it was like. And so I went out to this spot where he wanted this trench to be dug back in there. And he said, for every good piece of dynamite you put in, he said, put in one of those old ones and we'll get rid of it. Because he didn't want it around. So me and the other fellow was working with me. We dug a little hole and put a good one in and a bad one in and put the cap on there and lit the fuse and ran back a ways. And there's a poof. Well, that didn't amount to much. So we went down and we didn't see much what it did. And so we went down and we dug another little hole, and this time we put two good ones in and two bad ones in and put the cap on there. And I had this funny feeling, but so we lit the fuse and we ran back quite a ways. We was probably, I'm going to guess we were 30 yards away or so, 40 yards. And it was a boom, you know. We're standing there and all, you know, watching. It wasn't too much of anything. And all of a sudden, crash, right beside us was a stone about this big, just right between us. We were standing watching this thing, you know, and stone about this big right between us. Woo, that made us both tremble a little bit, but didn't make much of a hole. So we went down, we dug another little hole, and we put three sticks, good ones in, and three bad ones in. And, well, in my mind's eye, you know, you put dynamite in, it blows a big hole, you put more in, another big hole, you know, in half an afternoon, we'd have the whole thing blew out there. That was my mind, you know. I wasn't smart enough to know what I was doing. And so we put three in, and then we put three bad ones in and lit the fuse. But I made the fuse a little longer this time because I wanted to get a little farther away. And I don't know where he went, but I ran probably 100 yards, and I crawled under an old dock that had inch and a quarter boards, 2x6s, or 6x8, 6 and 8 inches wide. It was an old dock. But they were good boards, inch and a quarter thick. And I'm hunched under this thing when that thing goes kaboom. I'm sitting on, boy, I'm glad under here. And all of a sudden, crash, and here come a big rock, about this big, come right down through that dock right beside me. And I picked up the rest of that dynamite, and I said, you can have it back. That was enough for me. That old dynamite was not stable. I found out later, if I had been walking along and stumbled and dropped it, that whole box could have gone off had it hit correctly. It was not stable. Once it gets wet, it's not stable. You don't know what it's going to do. But when it had enough jar, it sent that part off too. And we never did get an inland dock while I was there. The other thing I was thinking about was, I had a sister that was 2 years older than me, and she was in the youth group before I was, and when I turned 15, her and I did everything together until I turned 18. We just did everything together. We'd go to youth things, we'd go to church, she had a little falcon, and we just did everything together, her and I. And at nights, coming home from youth activities, Dad, I don't think he ever said it in words, but we had this idea in our mind that curfew was 11 o'clock, so we needed to be home after youth activities by 11 o'clock. We were supposed to be home by then. And so a lot of times it'd be cold at night, and we'd be tired, so we'd crank the heater clear up as high as it'd go. We'd open the windows clear up so we have plenty of fresh air, and then we'd sing all the way home, you know, so we didn't fall asleep. Anyway, her and I did everything together. But I remember at one youth thing particularly, I was full of activity and ignorance. And one of the youth said something about, let's go bowling. And my sister said, we can't go. No, I thought, why not? You know, my thought was, why not? But I didn't say anything. I had learned, you know, and growing up with it, that you didn't question her when she made a decision. And she said, we can't go. And so the youth group was a bit divided, and so some of them left, and some of them stayed. And she just stood there like a rock. She said, we can't go. Well, so we got, when the thing was over, we went home and went to bed, and I didn't think anything more about it except that we just don't go bowling. She said we don't go bowling, and so I just took it for granted we don't go bowling, and I didn't think any more about it. But the next morning when we got up for breakfast, we were sitting at the breakfast table, and she says, Dad, can we go bowling tomorrow night? And I'm looking at my sister, what is this? And he said, no, I don't think you need to go bowling. And she didn't say any more. And we were on a tight schedule in the morning, and so he went to work. But that night, at supper time, she said, why can't we go bowling? And she used every argument that those young people gave her that night, why we couldn't go, and she just said, we can't go. And they said, why can't you go? And they said, there's nothing wrong. And they used all those excuses she used on my dad. And she just put him to the wire, as it were, you know. And he just kept explaining to us and telling us. And he never did come down that night, I remember, as saying, well, because I told you so. My dad used to tell us that, and I think that's all right to tell young people that. I think it's all right sometimes to tell your children, well, just because I said so. I think that's a good enough reason. If Dad decides, I think that's all right. But he never did it that time. And so, but she just, you would have thought she wanted to go bowling by every argument she used. But the next time we got together as a youth group and they suggested again, she had all those reasons ready and she used them. That's why we don't go. The next thing I thought about when I was thinking about this was, I thought of Brother John Smooker. Maybe I shouldn't give his name. Maybe that's not fair to him. But one time, my wife and I and another couple were in charge of BMF Youth Camp. And I kind of had this fear. We weren't very old at the time. And we're going to get this whole group of young people, and they're going to do a whole lot of stuff that they don't want to do, because I grew up with some like that. And what am I going to do if 10 or 15 of these young people decide they're going to do something, and I say, no, you're not, and they say, yes, we are, and they're going to do it anyway? What am I going to do? And so at the youth committee, I said, I think before they can come to youth to this youth camp, I think they ought to memorize a certain scripture. And I gave the scripture I thought they ought to memorize before they'd be eligible to come. And so we tossed that around a bit in the committee, and finally, okay, we'll tell the young people if they want to come to the youth camp, they need to memorize this before they can come. And okay, I was happy because I knew that eliminated a whole lot of them, you know. You know what I'm saying? Well, when they showed up at youth camp, we were on our way to go on a hike or something. I forget what it was. And there was this deep discussion about public sports and who was winning and who was doing this and who did this. And and to me, that's disgusting. But I don't know if I'm just not smart enough to keep up with it or what, but it was disgusting to me. And finally, as they're going along, and I don't see that it was really, that's not what we came for. And I said, if you have the memory work done, maybe you have time to talk about sports. I said, how many of you have the memory work done? And only John Smooker's hand went up. The only one. And everybody else got quiet in there. And I turned and looked at John, and he said, I don't really care to talk about it. It's not that interesting. And he promptly changed the subject to something else, and all the fellows joined in. It was a better subject. We talked about, I don't know what, but we didn't talk about sports. And I was glad for that. Anyway, I was really glad for John's. What really stood out to me, and I've watched John through his life, and he's been a real encouragement to me. But he was fully aware of what was going on around him as a youth. Yet God was first in his life. He had his memory work done. Yeah, he could talk about what was going on, but he had. And I just understand recently from a talk he shared that I think he had only been a Christian about 6 months or a year maybe at that time. He had only just given his heart to the Lord not long before that. 2 Timothy, we're talking about stable. 2 Timothy 1:12 says, I am not ashamed, for I know whom I have believed and am persuaded that he is able to keep that which I have committed unto him against that day. Stable youth are youth who aren't youth who have all the answers and make no mistakes. But they're youth who know who they want to serve. There was one more sort of funny story at that BMF camp that I thought about. That night, when it was time to go to bed, the camp was in this huge barn. It was an old barn that had been converted over to a camp. Anyway, the fellows were assigned to sleep up on a loft, up in this loft, and I think it was 10 or 12 feet off the floor. It was quite a ways up there. And when it was time to go to bed, we sent them up there to go to bed, you know, and they just wouldn't go to bed. They just kept milling around. Finally I went up and said, I think it's time we settle down and go to bed. And I thought, now they're going to try me out. They just kept milling around and milling around. Nobody said anything. They just look at each other and wouldn't go to bed. And it finally came out that one of the fellas walked in his sleep. And he was afraid to go to bed. And I could understand why. If you're 12 feet off the floor and you walk off of that edge, because there was no railing. And he was afraid that he was going to walk off that in the night. And so I said, well, just put him in the middle and put all your beds around him so that if he gets up, he has to crawl over somebody to get out of there. And in 5 minutes, everybody's in bed and everything was quiet. We could learn a lot as a church from those fellows, I think. They weren't going to let one of them get hurt. They knew one of them had a difficulty, and they weren't going to let him get hurt. Sometimes we need to tell a friend no. No. But other times we need to just put our arm around them and say, it's okay. It's going to be okay. Stability isn't having all the answers. Stability is being there when another person needs you. Now this evening I'd like to do just a little bit different. I'd like to have the young people help me, if you will. I see you're mostly right up front here, and I appreciate that. And so I'd like you to help me, if you would. I'd like you to turn to 1 Timothy 4:12. I'd like to kind of use this for a simple text tonight. The Apostle Paul, he's an older man, and he's instructing a young man named Timothy. But what's he saying in verse 12? What is he actually saying? Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word, in conversation, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity. Now those are pretty nice words, but what do they mean? What do those words mean to you, young people? Now, do you allow the girls to answer to or not? Am I asking a question I shouldn't? Are they allowed to answer if they know? Okay, some of your brothers are saying, okay, it's okay. So you girls got an answer. What does it mean to be an example in word? In conversation. Now, that's an old word, but that actually means your lifestyle. It doesn't mean you're talking with somebody. It's talking about your lifestyle. What does it mean to be an example in charity, love, and compassion? What does it mean to be an example in spirit? Spirit is your attitude, that inner driving motivation that's in you. What does it mean to be an example in faith, in purity? Give us a Bible example just to help you out. Give us a Bible example and why you think that person was an example, how that person was an example in that area. Now, if I do all the talking, you fall asleep. Bible conference doesn't do us any good, does it? What do you think? Tell me what you think.
Think of Joseph.
Joseph. Okay, how? Who said that? Okay, how? Okay. How? Be real specific. How do you see it in relation to these six things? How do you see Joseph fits in there?
I guess when Potiphar's wife blamed him for that, I think you know what I'm talking about.
Okay. So he was an example in purity, right? Okay? When she tempted him to do something wrong, he fled from that. Okay? Someone else. There we have an example in purity. Okay? You're hitting the same ones I had dealt. Okay, Joseph, he was an example in conversation. He purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the king's meat. Okay? What else do you see?
If we convert charity to love, Jesus was definitely very obvious.
Okay?
He moved to compassion a number of times.
Okay? That's right. Jesus is a perfect example in every one of these. So I'm glad you said in his compassion. Okay?
I think of David.
Okay?
When he went out to face Goliath, he didn't do it for the ending of it. God wanted him to take care of him so he wouldn't be a challenge to the person. He didn't show off anything when he did it.
Okay? Go to 1 Samuel 17 on that one. Go to 1 Samuel 17. His brother said, "You're just here to show off. You're just here to see the battle." 1 Samuel 17 and verse 37. In spirit, his zeal. David said, "Moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the hand of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he shall deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine." And Saul said unto David, "Go, and the Lord be with thee." Even Saul, I think, drew back at that kind of zeal to defend God's name. Okay, someone else. We got three of them. I want to look a little more into David or into Joseph on purity, but we have charity, we had conversation, we have spirit. So we have at least two more there. Okay, turn to me. Was somebody going to say something?
I didn't know when he was building the ark, it took a lot of faith.
Okay, that's right. It did. He stood alone, didn't he? He stood all alone. Okay, go with me to Daniel chapter 3. Daniel chapter 3. Verse 16, Nebuchadnezzar built this great big idol, and he said everybody's going to bow down to it. He called all his wise men and astrologers, and he said everybody's going to bow down to this thing. When I turn the music on, you're going to bow down. So he turned the music on, and everybody bowed down, but who? Okay. Why did you call him by those names? Okay, that's right. We do. We call them by their Babylonian names, and we don't call them by their Hebrew names. What were their Hebrew? Who can tell us their Hebrew names?
Hananiah, Mishael, and
was it Azariah? Azariah, that's correct. Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. All those names have something to do with the God they served. Has something, their names meant a form of God. Anyway, okay. Well, the Bible uses them, that their Hebrew or their Babylonian names too. Verse 16. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O king, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Tremendous words. I think we need to be careful when we read verse 16 that it's not saying that they spoke haughtily back to him. We're not careful about answering you. We're just going to tell you. I don't think that's the way they did. I think they were very respectful. But I think what it means is they were not going to mince words. They were going to be honest and truthful. We're not being careful. We're just telling you the truth of the matter. Our God will deliver us, whether it be by burning us up and taking us home immediately, or whether by other some other means, we don't know. But we will not serve your God. And you know the rest of the story. Faithful in word. Faithful in word. Go to Ruth 1. I thought surely the girls would answer this one for us. In charity. This is the one I thought of. Ruth 1 and verse 16. And Ruth said, entreat me not to leave thee, or to return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go, and where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God, my God. Where thou diest, I will I die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me and more also, if aught but death part thee and me. That's real love. She was going into a completely strange culture, knew nothing about the people. She was going there because of her love for her mother-in-law and her mother-in-law's God. Outstanding. Now, go to Esther. Esther chapter 4 and verse 16. This is the one I thought of for faith. Appreciated you sharing Noah. Isn't that what you said on faith? Noah, the faith he had? Okay. I thought of this one as a young person. I don't think Esther was very old. Verse 15. Then Esther bade them return Mordecai this answer. Go. Gather together all the Jews that are present in Shushan, and fast ye for me, and neither eat nor drink 3 days, day nor night, night nor day. I also and my maidens will fast likewise, and we will go, and so will I go in unto the king, which is not according to the law, and if I perish, I perish. That's real faith. It's determining who you're going to follow, no matter what the cost. That's stability, youth. Now let's go to Genesis and look at the life of Joseph just a little bit. Genesis 39 and verse 9. Potiphar's wife is a wicked woman, and she is playing for his heart, for his life. And in verse 9, when she comes and presents herself, Joseph says, there is none greater in this house than I. Neither hath he, which is her husband, kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? He was devoted. He knew who he was to serve. and he made that choice. He would serve the Lord. Okay, go down to verse 22. Joseph is pure in his relationships. Joseph is pure in his, Genesis 39, verse 22. Joseph is pure in his servanthood. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison, and whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made to prosper. He was pure in his servanthood. Here was his opportunity to get away or to do what he, but he didn't. He stayed faithful to his charge, even though he was a prisoner. He was pure in his servanthood. Then go to chapter 50. And I've always been blessed by this part of Joseph's life. Verse 15. And when Joseph's brethren saw that their father was dead, they said, Joseph will peradventure hate us and will certainly requite us all the evil which we did unto him. And they sent a messenger unto Joseph, saying, Thy father, thy father did command before he died, saying, So shall ye say unto Joseph, Forgive, I pray thee now, the trespass of thy brethren and their sin, for they did unto thee evil. And now we pray thee, forgive the trespass of thy servants, of the servants of the God of thy father. And Joseph wept when they spake unto him. And his brethren also went and fell down before his face. And they said, Behold, we be thy servants. And Joseph said unto them, Fear not, for am I in the place of God? But as for you, you thought evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring to pass as it is this day, to save much people alive. Joseph was pure in his forgiveness. There was his chance to square the record, as it were, but he didn't do that. He just saw this as a means by which God had worked a miracle in the life of his family. His forgiveness was pure. He wept to think that they didn't understand his love, even to this point after he had done so much. Young people, I kind of took it that this was a talk I'm supposed to give to you guys. I don't know if it was or not. That's what was intended. But I want you to know that you need your parents in the church to help you in your walk through life. There's going to be times when you don't understand your parents. There's going to be times when you totally disagree with what their decision is. But listen to them. Pay attention, because you need them. But I want you also to remember that we need you too. Without your inspiration, without your zeal, life gets pretty discouraging for us. Sometimes I get discouraged as a minister. I don't know, ministers I guess aren't supposed to get discouraged, I don't know, but sometimes I get discouraged as a minister. And you just don't really know which way to go. But this year, I decided to go over. I wanted to spend some time in our school just so I could get to know the students. And you've got a wonderful school here, brother and sister. You've got a wonderful school here. I was really blessed. Friday morning when I was here, I was just blessed by your children. But I decided to go over and just try to get to know some of the children, and I'm lots older than they are, and I wanted them to get to know me a little bit. And the zeal that I feel there, the excitement that I feel there, the desire of those children to study and learn has really done a lot for me. It's really done a lot for me. And I felt that again when I was here Friday morning. It's just, I know sometimes there's problems, but it was exciting. It's just exciting to me to see your teachers that are there and to see the children just ready to go. All we need to do is just show them the way. Sometimes we get discouraged with the way as older ones. And young people, we need you. We need you much to just bless us and give us the zeal, the excitement that we need. I forget if it was last summer or the summer before. But the neighbor man cut down a cottonwood tree, and that thing is probably, it's either 6 or 7 feet across the stump. And they cut that thing down. And when I saw that, heard they were going to cut it down, I thought, there's some wood. If he doesn't want it, I'd like the wood. Now, a lot of people don't burn cottonwood. It burns pretty fast. But if you burn it about the second year, it does pretty good. We burned a lot of cottonwood. And so I went up and asked him, what are you going to do with that tree? And he said, if you want it, you can have it. I said, I want it. So here's this huge tree laying there on the ground. He said, well, tell you what. He said, when I have the guy cut it down, he said, I'll just have him cut it into rings for you so you don't have to do that part because he's got a great big saw. And I said, that's fine. So he did that for me. And so I went up there, all this wood. I mean, there's piles of wood from this big tree. And I went up there, and the first day I was there, I picked up a piece and I slung it up to put it into the back of my pickup and just caught my finger and just split it wide open. I didn't get my hand quite high enough, just split my finger wide open. So I'm preaching Sunday morning with a big old. And of course, all the young people want to know what I did. And so I was telling them what I did and what I had to do. And they kind of got their heads together, and they said, well, Brother Ron, we're going to come over and split that wood for you. We're going to put up that wood for you. Well, that's a pretty big job. Yeah, we're going to do it. So the young people, so the youth sponsors, they planned a hike for the young people and brought them over there. They're going to split that thing up in a couple hours, you know. Well, they got to splitting on that twisted old cottonwood. That thing was old, and it was hard work. And those fellows, their shirts were soaked that day. They were splitting and working. And finally, I told them, I says, it's time to quit. You need to go on the hike. You need to have some fun while you're here. And they said, no, Brother Ron, we're going to split this wood first. Then if there's time, we'll go on the hike. That day they split, it was either 4.5 or 5 cords of wood for me and had it all hauled down and thrown in front of my woodshed. All I had to do was put it inside. That was a huge blessing to my wife and I. That was just a huge blessing. We could never have done it. The old men in the church could never have done it. But the youth did. They were able. Youth can be a blessing. Another blessing that I had was the other Sunday morning. Sunday evening. I forget. I think it was Sunday evening. Brother Jake got up, and Brother Jake Krepp, you know him. He's my bishop. He got up and he preached a sermon on courtship. And it was clear and straightforward. He didn't mince many words, and he laid out what he felt was a clear standard for courtship. And there's no way I could have improved on it. And when he was all done and the last prayer was said and the last song was sung, we said amen, you know, and the service is over. One of the young fellows, he was sitting right in front of me. He stood up and he said, now I'd like to hear your take on it. What a challenge. What a challenge to get up and say something better than what the bishop had said already. I just grinned. But you know, we appreciate those challenges, young people. Don't you be afraid to challenge your ministers to a topic you want to hear. Go and tell him, I'd like to hear what you have to say about this. I'd like to hear what you have to say about that. Don't be afraid. Maybe you're not. If you're not, I bless your hearts. But go and talk to your ministers and tell them what you want to hear a sermon about. They may put it off a while. Don't expect it right away. They may put it off a while, but that was a real challenge to me, and I was just very thankful for that. I'd like to close with 1 Timothy 4. Let's go back there again. 1 Timothy 4 and verse 12. Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word, in conversation, that's lifestyle, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity. Till I come, give attendance to reading, to exhortation, to doctrine. Neglect not the gift that is in thee, which was given thee by prophecy, that's you, the teaching you've received, with the laying on of the hands of the presbytery. Meditate upon these things. Give thyself wholly to them, that thy profiting may appear to all. Take heed unto thyself and unto the doctrine. Continue in them, for in doing this, thou shalt both save thyself and them that hear thee. Young people, there's lots of people watching. There's lots of people watching your life. They want to know what the Christian life means to you. They know what it means to your dad and mom. But they want to know what it means to you. Don't disappoint them. May the Lord bless you.